Okay, so this is not on cardiac muscle, Valentin. So you probably should leave immediately. So this is a work that we have done with Nicolas Brunel and the postdoc in the lab, Magnus Richardson. And Magnus has now moved to the Brain and Mind Institute in Lausanne. So this is about the subthreshold resonance in neurons and the implication it can have for collective oscillation. So I'll try to explain what we have done. So first of all, this is the kind of, I'm sorry for this low-tech talk. So this is the kind of thing we are interested in. I mean, not precisely this one, but in general. So this is a recording from the hippocampus of a rat. And you see that here they have this is collective oscillation from an extracellular electrode, local field potential. And at the same time, recording from interneurons. So this is time, and each time you see a small bar, a spike is emitted. So it's a one cell, you see it emit a spike here, 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 and then here, here. Or this one, just one spike, this pyramidal neuron. So you see that so this is what is called raster plot. So you have an electrode in one of these 10 neurons. Each one, when one of these neurons emits a spike, you just put a bar, an action potential.
It's just like in the Pokemon.
Yeah.
No, but it wasn't clear that it was 10 neurons.
Right.
Yeah, sorry. So these are pyramidal neurons and these are interneurons. So interneurons, inhibitory interneurons, they spike. They have a spike frequency that is a bit bigger, larger than pyramidal cells.
And
so here, actually, this is a very high rate. So this is the period here is of this oscillation is thought to be it's 120 hertz or 150 hertz. So you see, you can count the number of cycles. So it's quite short episode. But this so.
So like 10 milliseconds.
So this is a little bit more than that.
15,
so these are sharp waves. This is when the rat either is in slow wave sleep or is consuming food. In other cases, there can be theta or gamma wave. Theta waves are in the, say, 8 to 15 hertz, and gamma wave around 40 hertz when the rat is going around or in REM sleep. So there are all kind of oscillation, but the only why I put this thing is just to show you that in general, when you have oscillation and you record from individual neuron, the individual neuron, they are not really synchronized with the whole oscillation. It's not that each neuron, like, it's very different from what we saw in the recording from Jeff Smith in this Butzinger complex, where you had all these neurons very, very synchronized with the rhythm. Here, in this kind of oscillation, each neuron is emitting some spike, but not completely.
How many neurons do I see in one of these oscillations?
Thousands?
Thousands?
You see a lot, yes. Many. This is just the one you can find. So now, actually, the story is quite complex. I mean, as you'll see a little bit. This is local field potential. Local field potential, so extracellular electrode, and this is intracellular.
Two records of extracellular electrodes.
So this is extracellular, this is intracellular.
Right, and the same line.
The two records.
They're the same.
What's the second one?
Two.
What is the difference between first and second?
I don't remember. I think it's just two experiments.
Just the location.
I don't remember. We can look at the paper. This was in vivo recording. So this is in vivo with the. So actually, the rat hippocampus, and as you have already seen in the talk, what people can do is to slice it. So you have a slice of the hippocampus with dentate gyrus, and then CA1, CA3, the region of the hippocampus, and then you can put that in a dish, and then, as you'll see, it's also possible to induce oscillation in the dish. So this is in some sense a more controlled experiment, because you have the slice in the dish, you can control the medium, and if you put things in the medium that depolarize a bit the neuron, you can induce this oscillation in the dish. You have this kind of collective oscillation, but now in the dish. So this is in some sense closer to a physics experiment. And you can also record from individual, you can look at the properties of individual neurons. So here what is shown is a paper from Paul Sen group at Oxford. So what they have done, they have looked in this slice at individual neurons. So they put a small oscillating current in the neuron subthreshold, and they looked at the resonance curve of the neuron. And what they find is that, okay, there are different type of neurons. So this is fast spiking interneuron, and individual small interneuron. They can, it has a peak at 40 hertz. So the neuron itself has a resonance at a particular value.
This is the amplitude?
This is the amplitude.
For given input amplitude.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So I'll show this in great detail after. So this one has a peak around 40 hertz, and this is a peak more around 5 hertz. And there is no link in this experiment with the frequency of the oscillation, but these are the dominant frequency of the oscillation. This is gamma rhythm peak. So this suggests that maybe the fact that these neurons are resonating at this frequency is not just a coincidence, but is useful for, or has some meaning. Okay? So here there are three types. I'll come to that. This is the purely passive one. So this is what you will obtain with RC. So I'll just come to that. No, this is completely in vitro. It's a slice, and it's a single neuron in the slice. When no oscillation is induced, it's just the study of a single neuron. When you inject, yes? Exactly, the small periodic current, so that you don't induce spike, and you look just at the property of the membrane. So this should... what is the outline of what I'm going to talk about? So the first point is I'll try to explain how this subthreshold resonance comes about, which is in fact quite simple. Then this is subthreshold, so we try to understand how this influences spike emission in noisy condition. Is the fact that one has a subthreshold resonance is important for spike emission, and once this is understood, then one can try to address the role of this subthreshold resonance in collective oscillation. I'll show that. Below the spike threshold. So, okay, maybe I should if you inject a small current in a neuron, then the potential can do something like that. If you, this is small, if it's bigger than that, you can induce a big spike, and then it can come back. So this is in this regime where it's just, and we look what the membrane is doing. So I try to be.
The resonance is just when you scan the frequency.
Exactly. So it's just electrical circuit, small. I'm in fact going to explain it. So just this is the simplest membrane, the simplest model of a membrane. It's a capacitor and a resistance. So of course, injecting current. I mean, this is the elementary physics here. So if you inject currents, you can compute what is the voltage as a function of frequency. And in this case, you have just something that decreases monotonously. So this is passive membrane, and it acts as a low-pass filter. Okay, so that's the basic.
And the characteristic frequency is just given by the
is RC. Yeah.
The RC.
Yeah, RC. It's the only time scale, actually. So what is the difference with this with the membrane of a neuron? So since Hodgkin and Huxley, Hodgkin and Huxley have described it precisely, in the neuron membrane, there are not only this capacity and this passive resistance, but there are also ionic channels. And this ionic channel, they have some active conductance in the sense that it depends on the gating variable. So the conductance is depending on other variables that depend themselves on the voltage and that have some dynamics. Okay? So and this, description of this channel as, Hodgkin-Huxley was a paper, was from 52, and in the 50 years since it has, there is a great deal of work on describing different channels. The Nobel Prize of this year is describing, crystallizing this potassium channel. What? It started with the squid, but then in all kind of cells in the heart, there are many channels, and people have described. So this is a big industry. Okay, so what is the effect of this gate? So in simple term, basically the effect of this active conductance is similar to adding some inductance to this circuit. So of course, if you add an inductance, you can have a resonance. Okay, so I will show it slightly more precisely. Okay. So this is a Hodgkin-Huxley description. So you have the potential difference on the two sides of the membrane. It depends on this ionic current and on the applied current. And you have this extra variable which depends on the voltage. So it's very easy to see what an injected current does. So it's just linearization around this thing. So if you linearize this thing, you have the constant thing plus the small oscillating current. You have the holding potential and the deviation. If you linearize this thing, then you obtain that the equation looks like that. So this is the passive part. And then there are supplementary variables that are just related to the gating variable. So you have added variable like this. And so this is a simple exercise. And now one can look at what is the resonance of this circuit. It depends, of course, on the time scale of the new variable and on the way they are coupled to the potential.
It's really interesting for me that you're part of the
Okay. Yeah, sure, of course.
You say very interesting sentence. I don't want to joke. On
the other side? Try the other side.
Yeah. You formulated a very interesting sentence. All these conductivities, they're just
Not completely inductance. Okay. I mean, this not is completely. That's why. That's why.
I want to say very simple.
Okay.
Okay. What is inductance? It is something where voltage is proportional to the derivative of the power. That is how I understand.
Okay.
And looking at these beautiful equations,
so
this equation. That voltage is proportional to the
unit. So this is look. Okay, so you see what you have written. Here you have something, and that's what I'm saying, it's like an inductance, because you have the voltage on this side, and here you have this WD of DT of this. Okay, so V is the voltage. V is the voltage. This is the gating. This is the gating variable. So you see,
linear.
W is like a current here. You see dvdt. So this is the current.
So you see, we forget all the equations and look only on this one and look like that. But all others should be forgotten.
So what? It's just the same. I'm just rewriting the Hodgkin-Huxley equation at the linear phase.
I also do not understand it too much.
Okay.
Because how understand you?
No, it's good, Valentin, it's good. If you don't understand, you have worked on this for 50 years.
That's why I asked for the one that I think is easy for everybody.
Sure.
You say, conductance, let us interpret like a current.
Yeah.
And then we see that loop derivative of the current is voltage. So exactly what I
Exactly.
But one of the things which I'm not so much sure. As I remember, in Hodgkin-Huxley equation, current is your conductance.
Yeah.
Times voltage, shifted by voltage. And so if I write this, I will have also that one.
So this is
exactly not here. Here it is just the conductor. You may see.
I've normalized it, Valentin. Okay, so there is a normalization here, which take care of the constant when you norm. Okay, so this is just a simple exercise. We can go through it. I mean, here is just linearization of this equation. It's just this one. You see, I mean, you have the delta V here, and then.
Can you explain somebody else? Maybe they don't explain. I don't know. It seems to me that the second term, if you make the reason the black hole,
so
current equal conductor.
Now you're not questioning his equations. You're only questioning his interpretation.
Yes, only.
It's not the equation.
Okay. The interpretation. Maybe we should not dwell too much on the. Okay. So what I'm saying is here there is. Okay, so here I'm saying this is a current, okay, basically, and this current, okay, have a derivative of a current, which is like V, it's basically like an inductance, okay. So this is in fact the equation you have written on the board. So now I'm going to look at this thing, which is not a model. After all, I will show you that for a real conductance model, we can compute this thing. But I will,
It's not really
an induction,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, sure.
He's telling
you how he feels as he does it.
Okay, this is math. Then you can add word.
Well, there was a picture before.
I think we have people. We have people from. Okay, we have people from Göttingen. I think Hilbert said once that if you replace point by beer and line by tables, the mathematics is the same. So, so I think we can call this that. This is really bad because I did this analogy just to help people, and then now I see that I've confused everybody. Okay, I shouldn't do it. Okay, so let's say that we have this.
And those of us who know less found it extremely helpful. The more you know, the less helpful it is.
Okay, so Okay, so that now it's really bad. So, of course, I mean, we're going to look at the simplest case. So we just add the one, okay, one of these variables. So, and then there is, here you have one time scale, and basically there is one coupling here. This is the leak current. So this is the passive thing around the resting potential, and there is one coupling variable. And then one can draw, it's this elementary computation, as you understand, a small phase diagram. And here, in green, is the part where you have a peak, so a resonance. So there is something that one can notice, that this line here is the part where you have complex eigenvalues. So here there is a peak, but all the eigenvalues of this 2x2 matrix are real. So this peak, when this time scale in this region, is coming not from complex eigenvalue, but from something that is rather different. It's just that if this variable is slow, okay, and if you drive it very slowly, then it can act. So suppose it opposes the change in membrane potential. So it will decrease this part when it is active. And then if you drive slightly faster, then this thing cannot follow the oscillation. And then it decouples. So you are back to the passive thing. Okay.
So I'm comparing appropriately scaled G and G1.
So I'm saying, okay.
I'm confused about driving.
Driving is here.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Driving is here. So I'm saying, okay, so here is the driving current. If you drive slow enough, then this variable can play a role. Suppose that this time scale is long compared to C over G, okay? So if you drive slow enough, then this variable can play a role. And if it opposes the change in membrane potential, then you will have this thing. And then, so maybe I should draw the two curves. So this would be the passive. And here, if you add a slow variable, okay, you'll have something like that. So when this time scale is long. So as soon as, when you drive faster, at some point this variable doesn't play any role because it cannot follow. The time scale is too long. So you're back to this curve.
And I'm confused about something very
okay.
simple.
Okay.
Where is the rate of driving on those curves?
This is I.
No, on those plots. I only see G and G1.
No, here there is no rate of driving.
Right.
So this is the inset, this is the resonance curve. So I'm just, here is just saying if you scan the frequency, do you have a peak or not in the response? Okay, so you fix the parameter, you compute the resonance curve, okay, maybe it's better. Yeah, okay, yeah, it's better, slightly better. So you just take this model, compute the resonance curve, the response curve. If it looks like this, you put green. If it doesn't look like this, you put white. If the model is unstable to start with, this is this thing. So here you have a half bifurcation. With zero here, the model is not stable.
And what's a negative G?
Okay, so this is, this G doesn't always come positive when you linearize the equation.
Then that's excitable.
So it depends. It can still be stable, but
it's excitable thing that it gets
stabilized. We are just at the linear order, so right. I mean, then you would have to put non-linear term.
It gets stabilized by the
non-linear. Yes, exactly. Even by the, it can be stable at linear.
Coupling.
Yeah, by the coupling. Okay. So I'm saying here, this is a point that actually people missed in the literature, but in this case, there are no complex eigenvalues. You have a peak, and there is no complex eigenvalue. We were surprised, in fact, to find it. It's just a low pass.
And the line that divides,
So this is the line where here you have complex. Complex. And here is the phase. You'll see later that the phase is important also. So here in this case is the part where you have a phase advance. And here in the other case you have no phase advance. The sign of the phase between the current and the potential will be.
So
complex eigenvalue is here.
Is this parabola?
Yeah, okay.
On the left.
What's the flat line in the bottom?
The flat line in the bottom.
Well, there's out of the parabola is another line. What is green?
So
below the green, what is that line for?
So, okay, we looked at other properties that you are not so interested in. We put a small step of current and look if it has a bump or not. But okay, because people doing experiment were doing this kind of thing. So
right now we should worry about that.
You should not worry about that. Okay, so this is just, this is a simple model. So I just want to slightly address the Valentin's question. So this is, we have looked now at how this simple model with 1 or 2W, sometimes you need 2 for the low frequency response, describes real resonance curve more complex model resonance curve. So these are kind of standards models. So we looked at a model which has, this is the sodium current, the potassium current, this is just Hodgkin-Huxley, and there is an hyperpolarized activated cationic current. Hyperpolarized activated means that it should be said that it's like more if you hyperpolarize, you have an inactivation gate that has a low that is active at a very hyperpolarized potential. So this is IH current. And this is this model. So if you look at the resonance like this, these currents are very fast. So basically they can be taken instantaneous in this range of frequency. And the only variable that you are left with is this inactivation gate of this gate of the IH current. So in fact you can, a single variable, you have this curve, okay? And if you go very slowly, because there are 2 time scale in this IH current, you need to add 1 more, but this is only below 1 hertz or 2 hertz. Already with 2 variable, you can fit completely the, and this actually is not really a fit, it's derived from eliminating variable in this model. So the other model is a model again with the sodium current, potassium current, a persistent sodium current. You have heard of this persistent sodium current in the talk last week. And there is a slow potassium current. And again, with 2 variables, you can reproduce this resonance around 30 hertz, and if you add 1 more variable, you can reproduce the whole curve. So I should say that these resonances are made with gates that oppose the change in membrane potential. So this could be either activation gate of the potassium current, which is this kind of thing, or inactivation gate and that's the what really is the gate in this IH current.
Just for clarity, yes. This abscissa is the frequency of I that
yes.
you're sweeping.
Exactly.
And you're at a point of the
I'm coming to that.
More complicated.
You'll see. So this is exactly the question that Pierre is asking. So of course, this is true at only one potential. So what we have done here is map the thing depending on the holding potential to see exactly what you say, how we move in this diagram. So this is what is plotted here. So this is model one. So this is from very hyperpolarized potential to minus 60 millivolts. So it goes like this. And of course, here, so this is the IH. Of course, here you lose the resonance simply because IH, when you go past this minus 60, completely inactive, so doesn't do anything. And this is the same for the other one. And the other one, you see that if you depolarize a lot, then this is a half bifurcation line, so it starts to oscillate on its own. Okay, so this is the dependence on holding potential. No. This is linearization, but as Pierre was had noted, the constant in the linearization depends on the holding potential, depends on the place where you are linearizing. So you can. Okay. So basically you understand that this threshold resonance is nothing very complicated. So now we'd like to see how this influence spike emission. So to do that in the simple way and just to examine it in a context where you have only subthreshold resonance, what we did is to introduce this generalized integrate and phi model. So integrate and phi model is just a very standard simplified model of neuron that was introduced by Lapik in at the beginning of the last century. So this is a generalization where we have added this supplementary variable. We have also added some noise term because we'll be interested in noise term. And this is the driving. And as in the integrate and phi model, what we do is that if the potential goes above a threshold theta, then we reset the potential to VR. So you see this is a very simple model. It's just linear evolution. When you reach a threshold, you reset the potential and you continue.
And that's a constant threshold.
Go ahead.
That's independent of your frequency.
So the threshold is constant. Yeah. Not really, because in the Hodgkin-Huxley type model, the threshold will depend, say, on the activation of the fast channel. Well, not. No, I mean this. Here the frequency is low compared to the dynamic of this fast current. In any case, so this will not. In fact, you've seen that at low frequency, this reproduce quite well the Hodgkin-Huxley model. At this frequency, if you are not at very, very high frequency, then the dynamics of this fast current is so fast that they can eliminate it adiabatically. Of course, if you go to very, very high frequency, this would not be true. This is not. If you have below 100 hertz, it doesn't change anything.
Somewhat related, but yes. Is there anything like a population dissipation field where could relate your
fluctuation
to the response to the equilibrium fluctuation of the unperturbed
These models are not very much equilibrium model. They are very well. Yes, you think so? I don't know. Here, in any case, so what we did is just simple. I don't think we have. Actually, we'll after that we'll verify on the full model. But here, okay. It's basically, you could ask the same question for the integrate and fire model. So we have just added a threshold saying that the threshold is coming from the fast current, and that's it.
Now, Pete did not derive his model by
definition
of function.
We didn't do either.
How did he come up with it?
This is an embarrassing historical question, because I did not read Lapic, although it was probably in French.
So when was Lapic?
1907, 900 or 7. So it's so much before.
Way before.
But actually, there are many also echoes as you add this thing that, okay, the membrane dissolves. So Hodgkin-Huxley was not coming completely out of the blue. I mean, it's just that they really had the first intracellular measurement and they could describe how this membrane was breaking in some sense. But, exactly like in the Hodgkin. In the integrated and
fine.
What? Not the repolarization due to the fast current, the spike thing. Then, of course, you have the membrane time scale, but the membrane time scale is here. But the fast, the potassium current, if you want, is fast compared to the time scale. So it's exactly like in the usual integrated and fine. Okay, so this is the thing. And the question is, what do we want to compute? Okay. So what we are going to compute, so we are going to put a small oscillating current in this neuron and look how the spike rate is changed by this oscillation. So this neuron would emit spike. Here I've drawn something where it emits spike due to noise, okay? And then I put a small oscillation, and what I want to compute is, so these are...
So you're saying the spikes are emitted due to the noise with zero I?
Or deterministically, but here it's a case with noise.
Zero
log. Yes, yes.
The I is zero. And
so the I is zero. You have some spike emission either because you...
Which is triggered by the noise.
It can be triggered by the noise. It can be triggered by the constant. Also, in my model, it can be triggered by the constant part of the current. So you have basically two regimes. That's what I'm going to describe next. So either without noise, the resting potential is below the threshold, and then the thing is doing something like that. From time to time, it emits a spike due to noise, or the resting. You have the threshold here, and the resting potential would be there, and then the thing is without noise emitting spike regularly. So here I've drawn this case, but we are going to look at both, and also the transition between the two.
And what is that frequency?
So it depends on
your model in the deterministic.
Deterministic frequency would depend on the way you drive it. It depends on the level of current you are injecting, of steady current you are injecting. Oh, I'll show that. So here there are many neurons, okay? So each line, each horizontal line is a neuron. When there is a dot, it's a spike that is emission. And what I want to look at, I do the histogram of this thing, and it is slightly modulated with this frequency. No, I'm not coupled. It's just one. Or you do the experiment. One neuron for a long time, or 100 different uncoupled neurons, and you do the thing.
Is different. Well, t equals zero is always the same.
What is t equals zero? Sorry.
Well, it's phase locked to your.
Yeah, exactly. So
phase locking into the modulation.
Exactly. So you want to compare what is this modulation of the spike rate compared to the driving current. So there is an amplitude and a phase.
To the period of the oscillation. You have to give some t0, you have to tell somehow where you're...
No, I mean, it's a long time. So the time is given by the oscillation, the external oscillation, and now you look at the response of this thing. How is it shifted in time? What is its amplitude and how it is shifted in time?
Is this a simulation?
This is simulation, yes. I would be happy that it would be experiment. I mean, maybe the experiment will be done, but it's not done yet. So now to address Pierre's question, this is what would happen in the deterministic case. So here it's the case where there is no noise. Okay. So this is a classic computation for the leaky integrate and phi neuron from 1972, and we just redid it in this slightly more complicated two-variable case. So what you see, again, this is this is an inset to show a larger range of frequency. And here, what you have in the deterministic case is very sharp, infinite diverging response just at the firing frequency. So here, the subthreshold resonance is here, but you have absolutely no peak at the subthreshold resonance. You have just response that are very sharp at the, basically you understand it, it's an oscillator which has a very definite frequency, the spike emission, and you have a big response, infinite in fact, when you drive it just at a commensurate frequency. So you have peaks at all the multiple of the spike rate frequency. Okay? This is a single neuron. Simple computation is a single neuron driven with a small periodic. The neuron itself is emitting a spike at a given frequency here, and you drive, you inject a small current in it, and you look at how the thing is modulated in time, and you obtain an infinite response at the oscillator frequency, at the multiple of the frequency. And there is a very analogous computation for the leaky integrate and phi in this night paper.
The response,
so here, there is a small envelope on this thing, but these divergences are all the higher harmonics too. This is linear, and this, I'm not looking at the locking thing, it's just purely linear. Okay, so this is...
The main point is the data is a DC current.
Here, there is, yes, exactly.
DC current tells you the firing.
Exactly. And the main point is that here you don't see anything at the subthreshold. If you see something, it's more deep at the subthreshold frequency than a bump. Okay. Okay. Because it's here.
Why?
Because you don't see it in some sense. There is no resonance in the spike rate at this point.
It wasn't a resonance in the absence of integrated fire. It's
a resonance just for on the subthreshold. The property is not to, so. Okay. Yes. So if it doesn't phi, you don't see anything here because we are computing the modulation of the spike rate.
So to see resonance,
it should be phi. So here, what we compute? We compute, so first of all, the quantity should not be zero, so the neuron should phi. Either it should phi due to noise, or it should phi due to some injected currents, or a combination of the two. So what I'm just telling you is a simple thing, is that if you don't put noise, you just drive it with a supra-threshold thing, it emits like an oscillator. Now if you put a small oscillating current in it, then you only see resonance at the frequency of the oscillation of the spike rate, not at the subthreshold one.
But okay, let me ask his question a little differently. Before you talked about integrated fire,
yes,
you had something else where you had this subthreshold resonance.
This is here. This is what I have. So what I have, what I'm computing. I was not clear. So I'm taking this part, which is subthreshold. I'm just adding a threshold on it. So I'm saying, okay, this is subthreshold. So this is linear. So it says if I drive, I don't put a threshold, I can compute everything. There is a big response of the of this membrane potential at a definite frequency. Now what I'm doing is said, okay, of course a neuron also emits spikes. So what I'm saying is that, okay, this is valid if V is smaller than some amplitude. If V is bigger, then I emit a spike, I reset V, and then I start again with this sub-threshold.
And it's that resetting that eliminates the sub-threshold.
In some sense, yes.
I got it. So this is what something you call a resonator
of polymer? Izzy Kevich has proposed a model that is a little bit similar to that. I mean, it's not derived from Hodgkin-Huxley. And it's basically based on complex eigenvalue. So this is, well, okay, yes, some it's equivalent to that in some part of the phase diagram, in the part where you have complex eigenvalue.
Sure.
No, I mean in general. So we put this generalized, okay, generalized. So there should be a... Yes, sure.
It is written here threshold 10. Suppose the threshold is equal to 10 millivolts.
That's what we are going to take,
so
actually.
So I have this last question. So if you induce stimulation with amplitude of 1 millivolt,
exactly,
no matter what is the frequency, the response is flat. It's frequency independent. That's what this is.
No. So I don't understand your question. So it depends. What is the holding potential?
10 millivolt.
Okay, 10 millivolt over. Over. If the holding potential is 10 millivolt below the threshold, we don't see anything because okay, there is no spike. That is.
So, but you may see the following thing: we apply the current and we measure the voltage.
No, but this is not what I'm... So, yes, of course. That's, of course, that's built-in. That's built-in. What you are saying is built-in in this W.
Going into conditions where there are spikes.
So I'm taking a condition where there is a sub-threshold resonance. So, if I do what you say, I see a big jump in the...
I will see the resonance curve.
Exactly. But now... Yeah. So, this is plotted here. Okay. So, okay, this is plotted here. Maybe I should...
Don't you always have the DC current?
I'm going to show you the different cases, okay? So okay, this is the sub-threshold. So this is this dash. Probably you don't see it from where you are. But there is a peak here, okay? A peak. And when you have, if you look at the spike response, then you don't see this peak here. You see another peak, which is at the sub-threshold. Okay? Okay, so let's continue. Maybe it become clearer. Okay, so now what is the case for what is known for the usual integrate and phi? No resonance. So at low. So now we put both current and noise. Okay, so if you are in a case where the current is above threshold, then and you have a low noise, then even with noise you see a remnant of this deterministic case. So you have one peak here, one peak here. When you increase the noise, what you see is just that the curve becomes monotonously decreasing. Okay? So this is the...
This is purely an oscillatory now. So, DC component.
Yeah, this is a DC. There is a DC component, but okay, what you do here is you maintain the spike frequency fixed. So you increase the current, you decrease the DC current, you increase the noise so as to maintain the spike frequency fixed, and you look. Okay. Okay, so... the power law of the DC is 1 over square root of omega in the... This has been studied in quite detail. I mean, depends a little bit. Also, it depends on the correlation of the noise you inject. Oh, that's nice. Me too. Okay.
This is
okay. Okay. So, I mean, no, that's okay for the speaker. But I think now you'll appreciate more this seminar. I mean.
Right. Asking questions.
No, ask question. So now what I'm showing you is, okay, what we did is, so now we are putting noise in this neuron.
Yeah.
Both. So if you put a low amount of noise and a current, then you have, as I was showing before, I mean, it's basically the deterministic case, you destroy very fast the high frequency resonance, and you still have a peak at the spike rate frequency. Okay, so there is a peak here, no peak at the subthreshold resonance. When you increase the noise, you destroy this peak, and now you have a peak that appears at the subthreshold frequency. So this is one of basically the main result here. So here it is. So what we have plotted is the frequency of the peak as a function of noise. So when you increase noise, you have a sharp transition between the spike rate frequency and the subthreshold frequency. No, it has nothing to do with stochastic. Let me explain. Because, for instance, the integrate and file neuron has a stochastic resonance. Stochastic resonance comes from a resonance between the oscillation and the emission.
It has to do with the threshold, the probability.
Exactly.
At a certain noise level, your noise locks you.
No, I mean, this is different from stochastic, as far as I can see. It's different from stochastic resonance. I can do the same. So maybe this is a different quantum. Okay. This is a different. So look at the integrate and phi neuron. You know that integrate and phi neuron has a stochastic resonance that has been computed in particular by two fellow in the back. So, but here, if you look at this curve, there is no resonance here. You see? So this is integrate and phi. There is absolutely no resonance here. But you know that on a different quantity, you have stochastic resonance. But this is not the same quantity. This is the modulation of the spike rate. So it's a different quantity. Okay. So now, so this is the main... The main point is that if you want to see this subthreshold resonance in the spike rate emission, you have to be in a condition where noise is sufficient to destroy this peak, and then the way it appears is just because here, when you have destroyed this peak, then you have this subthreshold thing which in some sense filters the noise and amplifies it at this okay, so that's okay, so now we have looked at the same thing in the two conductance-based model. So maybe we can just look at here. So this is this model with a IH current. So this is a low noise case. So here it is spike rate frequency, and this is the subthreshold resonance. So you see you have nothing. You don't see it exactly like in the GIF model, this generalized integrate and phi model, and if at the same or the same frequency you decrease the DC current and increase the noise, then you have a peak here. So basically the message is that if you want to, if this resonance has to play a role in synchronization, you should be in very noisy condition. Otherwise, it cannot, because the neuron, they communicate, if there is no, in the absence of gap junction, they communicate only with a spike, I mean, synaptic current. So.
You said this is non-stochastic resonance. Okay, what is it? What's going on?
We have computed it, so.
I understand.
What I'm saying is that, okay, if you have a deterministic thing, then basically you see an oscillator, and the oscillator, what you see is the frequency of spike emission. So this is this is why you see this big resonance there. Now, if you have a lot of noise, then the inter-spike interval becomes very wide, so you have no resonance at this spike frequency thing. But still, now the subthreshold resonance amplifies. So noise, you can think of it as a sum of Fourier. It's white noise here. So it's a sum of Fourier component. And the subthreshold thing is amplifying the component of the noise at the subthreshold frequency. So then, basically, that's why you get more modulation at this frequency that... Selection. Filtering the noise is a better word.
I mean, I can see how these two mechanisms compete, but why necessarily would one go away than the other?
So, no, it's not the suffering. You see, it's linear.
Why couldn't you get both? Why does the resonance suppress?
Okay, so in some sense, this is something. I will tell you the computation we have done to capture the phenomena. So in our computation, we cannot capture what you're, we never see what you, the two coexisting. We see this sharp transition between the two.
Would you be surprised if you saw coexistence?
No.
I think in some sense he says it because, I mean, if you see the sharp peak at the deterministic frequency, then it, in some sense, it means that you are in this oscillating regime where there is, this sub-threshold thing is not acting. Okay, I mean, we can make it slightly more precise on the equation, but I don't, maybe. Okay, so I'll tell you what we did, in fact. So. Okay, so it could be two phases, what you are going to say. Okay, maybe.
In order for this long time scale not to play a role, there should be many in the fact that they are short, so this cannot do its thing.
No, you're right that maybe if we could have some bistable model, we could have both in some sense. That if there was some kind of bistability between the two regimes, then that would be a way to... It's not what is happening in this model, but maybe in some regime we could have some bistability. Okay, so how this is a small... So what we did... So of course one can do simulation, but... So if we take this generalized integrated phi model with noise, then what we get, if we want to analyze it, we go to this Fokker-Planck description, the associated Fokker-Planck description of this Langevin equation, and then one gets two-variable Fokker-Planck equation, which is too difficult to analyze. So what we did is to look at the case where this new time scale of the supplementary variable is long compared to the membrane time constants, which is the case of the current we looked at also. So in this case, it's much simpler to analyze it because we say that if the time scale is long, then the basic approximation is to say that, it's more the inverse of that. So this is the, so what we say is that, okay, if this is long compared to the dynamics of W, basically it is only the mean of V. If tau 1 is fast compared to the dynamics of V, it's only the mean. And then one can compute correction to that, but this is the basic approximation. So when one does that, then, one goes from a two-variable Fokker-Planck equation to a single-variable self-consistent Fokker-Planck equation that is much more easy to analyze. A reset is taking into account, of course. No, because it's a single variable. We reset the V variable. So, okay, let me check. So the reset is in the V variable. The V variable, so this is PS of small v. The W is here, So then, of course, as you say, this PS has to be supplemented with boundary. But this is now a single variable, so it's an easy problem. It's not like looking at Fokker-Planck in two dimensions. So there is a threshold condition saying that, I have not written it, but it says that P at threshold is zero, and there is a condition at reset, which is just that the current that escaped from threshold is re-injected at VR. So this is saying that the derivative of P at threshold is equal to the difference of derivative at the reset. Okay. So this is I'm just doing the stationary case because it's very easy to understand. So this would be the single variable Fokker-Planck equation. It's just easy. I mean, it's just this like this Cramer's calculation of escape time in the 40s. But now this V, there is a variable here in the equation which depends on the solution. So this has to be fixed. In the end, when you compute this PS with V, then you have to say that the mean of V is compatible with what you have. So this gives an equation that fixes this mean of V. So this is the same. And here I've shown what is the accuracy of this computation. So as tau 1 increase, we go in this direction. So here this dot is what we compute with this with this approximation. This is the first correction, this dotted thing. And you see basically that, okay, if tau 1, we are going to look at, say, tau, that's momentum, time constant is 20 milliseconds, then tau 1, this supplementary variable, is 100 milliseconds, so it should be around here. So, I mean, this is quite okay, this approximation. And here, in this condition, you see the bold line, what is computed within this approximation, and the other, the dot, are the numerical simulation. So, it works quite well. Okay. So now, So we have seen when this subthreshold resonance can be seen. So now we'd like to see what role it can play in networks of neurons. So again, the simplest case would be a fully connected network of these neurons. So maybe I should draw that. So this would be a network of neurons which are fully connected. And then, okay, so, and they are driven all from the outside with some noisy thing. So again, so how we look at this thing. So there is a steady, so we are going to look at the stability of a state which is asynchronous. So in this case, if noise is strong, each neuron can emit spike at this frequency that we have computed, and there is a component due to the mean contribution of the other neuron from the network. And what we have is a steady asynchronous firing state where each neuron is emitting spike at some rate. And then we can look at the stability of this state. So the way to do that is to assume
there's a single firing frequency basic to all neurons.
Because in the simplest case, you take them identical. It's not necessary,
but,
actually.
But they're not.
No, they are completely, each one, actually the in phase has not much meaning because each one is emitting basically in a Poissonian manner. So, and then one can look at the stability of this state. So one assumes, so we look at the perturbation, we assume that the thing is, will emit with some frequency. Then this we can compute the effect of that because we have computed the response to an oscillating current. So first of all, given that the firing rate is oscillating in time, what should compute what is the synaptic current that the neuron receives. So this depends on synaptic dynamics. If, as I will show you, if synaptic dynamics, basically with transfer will transform this oscillatory thing into another oscillatory thing with a different amplitude and a different phase. So given the synaptic current, then we can compute the firing rate modulation. This is just the previous computation. And basically, then the firing rate modulation should be consistent with what has been assumed to start with. And this gives the threshold of the instability. So basically, the thing looks like this. There is a synaptic part which say that, okay, this firing rate is modulated at omega. It gives a synaptic current which has an amplitude and a phase compared to this modulation. And then there is the response of the neuron to this synaptic current, which is what we computed before. And basically, the thing should be one, meaning that it should be what has been assumed to start with. So what is this synaptic thing? If there is a simple delay, suppose the simple model is to say, okay, one neuron is firing, then the postsynaptic neuron receives it a time delta later. So then this phase is just a delay. So it contributes omega. Delta is the delay. If we assume a more complicated synaptic dynamic, we say there is a delay, but then also synaptic current is rising and decaying with two time scale, then it's also easy to compute what is this phase. Then it looks more complicated. And the basic point is that if one is to satisfy this self-consistency condition, then the lag coming from the synaptic current should be compensated by a phase advance coming from here. So basically, you lose time at the synapse. You should regain it in the firing rate.
I'm confused. You're talking about one neuron?
No. So this is a network of fully connected neurons. There is a noise coming from the outside. Each one is driven by some independent. And then you look at what is the... Will this network be, basically each neuron will be asynchronous, the mean activity will be constant, or will the mean activity show spontaneous oscillation in time? So that's what we are looking at. So what? So that's what I'm saying here. So here the synapse is either a delay, so this is the simplest case, or you can do a more complicated model of a synapse where you have a right...
The neuron has many synapses.
Yes. In this, the simplest case, you receive synapse from all the other neurons in the network.
Yeah.
We can do also sparse.
So why is one single synapse what's relevant? It's all the different ones.
Sure, but when you do the... So basically, you... What is not important is the single synapse, is the mean current that is injected.
So this is all the whole collective. You describe the whole collective.
Exactly. So I'm standing here. I'm the single neuron. I receive a lot of synapse. So either what I receive is constant in the mean, or is modulated at some frequency. So suppose I receive some mean synaptic current that is modulated at some frequency. Then I respond to that, I emit spike at this frequency, and then another neuron of the network will receive the, what I emit, modulated. So this
and
is...
everybody's going to the second.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, sure.
Nothing's too fancy here. Okay, so this is the condition, okay? And then, okay, one can... look at phase diagram. So basically, this is how. So this is a simulation with 5,000 neurons. So this is one neuron in the thing. So it emits spike from time to time, and then you have a modulation of the collective thing at this sub-threshold frequency in a given part of the phase diagram. So this is noise. This is strength of the excitation. If you are here, then you go into this. Maybe I shouldn't call it epileptic. After what we have heard last week from Stephen Chick, but in any case, here all the neurons are really well synchronized, you fly extremely fast. I mean, basically, you are. This is only the refractory period that limits the spiraling frequency. Here, this is this kind of modulation at the sub-threshold. At the sub-threshold frequency, and here it's asynchronous emission. And this is the frequency along this line at threshold for this. So here it is. It's basically on the sub-threshold frequency. Very
so the top.
So this is a phase diagram. Yes.
The top. There are three regions.
Exactly.
The top region is like the resonance region.
The top region, no, the resonance region in the middle one. The
sub-threshold. The middle one is the sub-threshold resonance.
The top
one is the just the simple.
Which
higher.
You also get in the integrated and phi model where everybody is spiking like mad and very synchronized.
In that model, it was low noise. High noise. Here it's not quite low noise.
Well, no, because when you are in a network, the excitation can be strong enough so that you suppress the noise. It's kind of self-consistent thing. Okay, so this concludes the thing. So the conclusion is that for this kind of thing, noise in some sense is useful to see what are the neuron characteristics, because otherwise you'd see only the firing frequency. You don't see at all the channel composition. This is more wishful thinking. I mean, we are in contact with Paul Sen. He told us that he will do the experiment, but I don't know when. So this sub-threshold thing is a mechanism for synchronization with excitatory synapse. I mean, not at a crazy rate, but at reasonable rate. What is the role of all these oscillations is in information processing is something that is very debated, and it's a very, very big question. There is no good answer at the moment. And okay, this effect can be seen probably in other contexts. This is not stochastic resonance, but probably, it can be seen in other contexts, like stochastic resonance appears everywhere. Okay, and again, this was done with Nicolas Brunner and Magnus Richardson.
Questions?